Welcome, coaches, to the Talking Split podcast. Kia ora for our New Zealand listeners that we've picked up along the way, and full chair for our Northern Ireland ones that we've somehow acquired as well. I'm assuming Luke O'Hay's doing some work over in that space for us. Zoe Carr, Nathan Cooper-Brown, welcome to you both.
Thank you for having me.
Good to see you.
It's great to have everyone back again. Reminder, you can follow the Talking Split handle on X, Instagram, and now YouTube. The Dave Herbert Clinic will be accessible next week that he ran last week for us down there. So we had over 100 registered coaches for Herbie's shooting clinic, which was fantastic. So we did film it, and we'll put that up next week that everyone can have a little bit of a look at. Coops, first up, the people are dying to know, how did you go on your Belbin test from last week?
I need to check my notes. What was it? I was a shaper...
Implementer
and a finisher, I think it was. Yep. So in summary, how do I put it? I think it was annoying, maybe overbearing, and something else. And it was pretty apt.
Yeah. Self-reflection is a wonderful thing, as it turns out. But really cool little test. I would recommend people go and have a little bit of a Google around of it. Belbin, B-E-L-B-I-N, is worth a look. We've actually got a little bit of work coming up to try and get something for coaches in this space as well that might be a little bit more unique to either players or coaches in this world. To our HR person, Catherine, I keep calling her HR. It's people and culture, isn't it?
Yeah.
Same thing. I feel like it's the same thing. People and culture. Now that we know she listens, we've got to get that right. So Catherine Moon's going to do a little bit of work around that as well as to what it can potentially look like at an association land. A couple of things to get into just before we get into the main part of the podcast. Unplug 24. So if you go to unplug24.smacktalk.com.au, that is the Wayne Holdsworth work that he's been doing around Smack Talk in general. It is largely around stay off socials for 24 hours. Like that's, and look, don't have to tell me twice, more than happy to live in that world. That's not an issue at all. But it is certainly to raise money to prevent sexual extortion and suicide. If you can't fundraise, just take part in it and raise awareness in it as well. That's not an issue at all. They are obviously looking to raise some money in that space, but there's nothing wrong with just staying off socials. Go and, like, weather's getting better. Like, go hang outside. Like, there's nice stuff to do out there. So I would recommend that. We did have intro camps over the weekend for both of you. Coops, how did yours go? You were on first on Saturday.
Horribly.
Oh, well, there you go. Well, and that's the end of this pod.
That's it for me, I'm out. Look, it was my fault. Just really poor planning. I valued system over toughness. I made some assumptions about carryover. We had way too many new athletes to make those assumptions. The big numbers after last year, I wasn't ready for the big numbers. And, I really feel like we lost a camp. And so I'm sure most of the listeners know me by now, so I'm kicking myself pretty furiously at this point. We've got some exciting kids there. The coaches were outstanding. I just wish I had planned it better. I had planned it differently. And been able to make the most of it. So always good to make some mistakes. As we say to our athletes, failure is growth. And, we'll fix it for the upcoming MPP and SPP intro camps.
Cool. What about your group, Zoe? You were on Sunday?
Yeah, this was pretty good. But I had the benefit of a phone call from Coops on the Saturday, just with some notes and things to help us shape that a little bit better. So had I not had that, I'll probably be sitting in the same boat as you, Coop. So, we had a really good day. We had an outstanding level of coaches there. I don't think anybody could have left there without the feeling that they'd been coached. We got a lot of skill set and system stuff in, which was great. But what I was happier about was we got a lot of our standards in. So how we are going to train, how we behave, how we own our space, own our journey, that it's a safe space to, be brave and answer questions. We've talked about it on the pod before about how sort of annoyed I get when athletes sort of melt into the background. Like we want, again, you don't have to be an extrovert, but you have to be powerful to be a basketballer and have presence. And we got somewhere with that. So, I was really pleased with that.
Just something that we've said to our athletes after camps, Rob, and we said it again to the group on Saturday, is this issue with feedback. And I just wanted to echo it here on the pod to coaches and parents and athletes. Stop asking for feedback. So Craig Hockley, our elite teams administrator, the poor guy has been dealing with over 150, you know, feedback emails coming out of selections. Now, I understand that. You know, you miss selection. You know, you're looking for answers. You want to get better. Sure, I get that. Throughout the process of 5 hours on court, you are receiving feedback. Every time a coach talks to you, that is feedback. That should be taken to the athlete journal and written down so it's remembered. Then from that, a plan should be created around how to get better. Okay, I got feedback on this part of my offensive game, this part of my defensive game. Okay, those are the things I need to go away and improve on, especially between now and the next time I see those coaches. That's what you should talk to your coaches about. Not more feedback, because a lot of the feedback stuff isn't getting through. You know, a lot of it is just empty questioning. The feedback's been given to you on floor. It's your responsibility, it's your accountability to your own development to write it down and create a plan. Now, if you're having a problem with the plan, that's where you engage with your coach. That's the conversation you should be having. So we've got to get away from this problem we've got with feedback right now and start getting more accountable for it throughout the athletes, getting it written down, creating the plans, and then if you need help with a plan, that's when you should ask.
And that is, it's a great point you make. Feedback has almost become this dirty word, and it's the nice way of saying, look, I'd like to complain about my non-selection
well
or something
said.
Like that.
Well said.
It's just sort of ended up in that. Feedback is actually really valuable, but as you say, you are getting it throughout the course. The hard part is you're given feedback from coaches in that sort of sense at a camp. 5 hours is a long time on court, but you might just be having a bad day. You can't make a shot, whatever the case might be. So the feedback may not be super relevant. Mm-hmm. Where I think there's more value in getting feedback is someone that's seen you over a longer period of time that can actually understand the ebbs and flows of what your game looks like, where the growth areas might be, where the little plateaus might have occurred over the course, that you can now start to put something towards. Mm-hmm. I think there's more substance in that. Mm-hmm. So I think the camps are more an evaluation check. It's like, well, okay, where are you at if I was comparing you to every other kid here on the day? Well, I can give you some feedback around that, sure. But over the course of a season, that's the ups and downs. Like, are you a kid that footy season hits and all of a sudden you go missing because that's your priority? And that's cool. Like, if that's your priority, that's fine. But are you still putting work into your game? What does – I need to be a better shooter. Okay, what does that actually look like? Or – your decision-making under pressure. Well, okay, what does that look like in the context of your team? Are you someone that plays in a VC competition or a Division One competition and you're a poor decision-maker, but you go down to, say, VGL2 or Division Two at country champs and you're a really good decision-maker? It's not always the same. You're not comparing apples and apples.
That's right.
That's kind of my feel with it. It's I think it's great to want more, but by the same token, it's not always super achievable either. That's the difficulty with it. And even just how you ask. It's one thing to just sort of, oh, I'd like some feedback on this, and that's where it ends. Like, that's not really what you're after, I don't think.
No, and it's not showing a level of self-awareness that's needed to progress in our sport and to progress in life. You know, I think what you said there around that self-reflection on what sort of day I had. You know, how did I prepare for it? How was I mentally engaged? What was my effort like? So that self-report should be the first thing that goes down in the journal when you're starting to think about how do I improve on this session.
Yep. Do you have, and this question without notice, because I'm just thinking we can probably create it if we needed to, do you have like a little reflection checklist for a player at the end of a session or at the end of a game or anything like that they could potentially go through? Like, how did I think I played? What were my areas of improvement? Or is it just like a blank page?
We usually go with what did I do well and why? What can I do better and how?
Yep.
So we usually start with that. Yep. If I have a stronger relationship where I'm spending more time with an athlete, maybe an MPP athlete,
yep,
then we would look at their IDP, so their individual development plan, and we would look at the specific areas that we've identified that they need to improve on, and we could go a little bit deeper.
Yep.
But we start with those two questions for most of the athletes. And whenever athletes come up to me, you know, after a big camp or a session and ask me for feedback, the first thing I say to them is, well, how did you think you went? So we're immediately doing a reflection / self-awareness practice.
One of my old bosses used to do that, and it's like anytime I'd sort of – because I had this thing where I'd go and check in with my boss at the end of every year, and it's like, hey, was there anything – like, what were our wins, what were our losses? any sort of areas, and every now and again I'll get one of them without notice, and it's like, hey, you know, where are we at? And he's like, well, what do you think? It's like, you're buying time. Like, you don't know. Like, you're trying to find ways now that you can come up with what you're thinking of as well, which I kind of found amusing, if nothing else. But it is a big part of what players go through, because I know as a coach, like, I used to have a just like a little Google sheet that I would just do in the car afterwards, and it would have all the basic things on there, like score, you know, all those types of things after a game. But I would usually do like a little hot review straight after a game with, like, okay, what do we do well? Which players from the opposition team hurt them? How did they hurt us? How did they guard on balls? Did they zone us? Did they press us? Those types of things. And it was just like a little thing I'd just sort of fill out. And it was actually part of my scout. The next time we play them, I can go back and have a little bit of a look. And it's like, well, actually, players 1, 2, and 3 really hurt us last time. We can go back and do a little bit of work on this before we see them again. How did I coach? Like, was I good? Like, did I stay off the refs? That was a big thing for me, is like making sure that I'm not going the refs, and that would impact on my coaching and decision making down the road somewhere. Those types of things too. So I'm just sort of thinking, can we put something together for a player as well? And it's like, well, okay, that's a good starting point. I think what you've said there, Coops.
Oh, I love that idea. You know, even, you know, can we put one together for athletes and coaches and get it out as a resource? Because I mean, it's only going to improve. Yeah. Yep. Their development.
Yeah, absolutely. I really like it. You good over there?
Yeah, I think I've got him.
Hey, guys, Zoe's still here.
Sorry, I'll be honest, and I don't know if you'll end up editing it out. I was purchasing Oasis tickets.
Well, look, it'd be hard to look back in anger at this point.
Yeah, we kind of put up a wonder wall there as you and I were talking.
Great gear. Like, really well done. It's
but yeah. We got him.
Oh, that's a champagne supernova moment.
Yeah, that is.
Okay, yeah. How long is this going to go for?
How long we got?
I was going to say,
this could be anything.
Remember who's here.
Yeah, true.
Exactly right.
Very true.
We're a knee-high away from losing an entire Tuesday. Like, it's this could spiral dramatically, as it turns out. But what we are talking about after 12 minutes of everything under the sun and wheeling back to this, imposter syndrome in coaching. And now this is something we've wanted to talk about this for a long time. And to be fair, we haven't really done the necessary work to put together something credible in this space. So it is a big part of what we do as coaches, in that it is, for those of you that may not be aware, imposter syndrome is like that feeling like a fraud. You don't belong there. You devalue your own worth. You undermine your expertise, those types of things. That's what we talk about when we talk about imposter syndrome, because this, I feel, happens with coaches quite a bit. As coaches, we are by nature trying to fix things that have potentially gone wrong or aren't quite where they need to be. Zoe's still got a massive smile on her face, so she's still thinking Oasis tickets at this point.
I'm very excited.
Okay. But the whole imposter syndrome, I think I've experienced it. I mean, I only know that now looking back on it, though. But I don't think I realized it at the time. But I think looking back, it's like, yeah, that was a moment. That was a moment where it's like, well, maybe I wasn't super comfortable there. I didn't feel like I belonged in that space. And I think as coaches, we do tend to go through that a fair bit. Like, have you experienced it, Coach? Like, looking back on it now, is that something you realised at the time, or you can only sort of see now looking back on it?
Yeah, no, 100%. Every time I was lucky enough to progress into a new team or program or scenario, I always had it. I always had that one moment where maybe a suggestion was questioned, or maybe there was a moment where I was like, oh man, you know, do I have something here? And it hit me like a ton of bricks, that sick feeling, you know, down in the pit of your stomach. And I was like, oh man, like,
I just want to melt into the floor here. And
yeah.
Yep.
So yeah, no, can definitely empathize with all our coaches that it's definitely real. And yeah, I've felt it many times.
Yep. What about you, Zoe?
Yes. And still battle it. It's a bit of a staple in our female coaches. Not to say it doesn't happen in male coaches, it does, but it is so evident in female coaches. So I battle it myself regularly, but I also am battling it with the coaches that I work with to try and help guide them through. And I think a lot of it comes from a female perspective, it comes from not wanting to show that we think we're good at anything. And so, because that's seen as, that is perceived, and I'm happy to be proven wrong on this, but that is from my experience. Females, you know, stepping up and saying that they're good at something or owning something or having that confidence is seen in a very different light to a male that does it. And you're seen as, you know, a bit like arrogant and up yourself and you're this and you're that. And frankly, a lot of that does also, I'm not saying it's always men that are saying this, it often comes from other women, which frustrates me. But a man steps up and says, I'm good at this. Everyone goes, wow, he's confident. He's a leader. He's, you know, and so it's not just about the coaching landscape. It's also like a societal issue and the lens in which we look at women versus men, which contributes to it, not just in coaching, in anything in life.
Yeah, that is life in general, for sure. I look at it now like I'm, we'll call it early 40s, being kind to myself. I look at it now and I was probably fortunate that when I was starting off in my coaching, I was young enough that imposter syndrome probably didn't really take a hold at that stage. Mm. Like that beautiful blend of arrogance and ignorance where it's like, no, I'm good. Like it's, you know, I played a little bit of basketball. I watch NBA. So, you know, surely I can coach it. That's not a problem. I don't think I really experienced it early on. I just had this, I don't want to say unwavering like belief that I could do it, but there was just this like, oh, well, it's just coaching. Like it's no different to anything else we do. I think it's probably manifested a little more as I've got more experienced. I've probably noticed it a little bit more.
I think there's probably another big change that's come over that time since when you started to now, which is things like social media or things like, you know, forums or just things that have more access to more opinion. So when you first started coaching, you could go and coach and people might have been talking about you, but you didn't know.
Oh, blissfully now. Unaware. Blissfully
and
unaware.
And that is a beautiful place to live.
It really is.
But now you know. And we can sit there and say, oh, don't read it or don't listen to it or don't take it in. We do. It's as simple as that. We do, because there's this almost like a human nature to know what is being said about us if we're accepted, if people, you know, agree with us, are happy with us, or aren't, you know, all that sort of stuff. You know, it would be great to be able to not, I know I still do it. I still, like when people will send through screenshots of things that people have written, like I should just automatically delete them, but I don't. I sit there and I read it or I'll go and find it and I'll read every other, because I just need to know what's being said. And then the reaction to that is not good. And it helps, I think it helps build on that imposter syndrome, because it all it does is add that seed of doubt. Even though there's a lot of times where I read it, I'm like, this idiot doesn't know what they're talking about. And, you know, I'm still confident in what we've been doing. I'll still put it down and go, but, you know, and I shouldn't get to that place, but human nature does that too. So I think the introduction of everybody being able to, you know, it used to be five people might find out what someone has to say or their opinion. Now, with the click of a button, 500 people find out. And I think that adds to that.
Yeah, within a doubt. And we've probably seen it play out a little bit over this past week, like Southeast Melbourne parted ways with Mike Kelly, which, horrible news,
horrible.
Frankly, yeah, on my awful end. Like it's, Mike is not only one of the best, like I feel like everyone has said this during the week, one of the best people in basketball, but they were 0-5. Frankly, I don't care. Like it means nothing to me. Like I think Mike is one of the best people in the world without a doubt, but I also think he's an excellent coach.
Mm.
And he's in a position where he's trying to assemble a roster, get a roster cohesive and working together under pressure, of course. Like it's not as if, like NBL is a good competition. It's not as if you're just going to roll over and get a win from someone somewhere. Like Mike works his tail off. But some of the comments of, oh, they had to, he's terrible coach, he doesn't know what he's doing, factually incorrect. Like could not be more incorrect, yeah. in actual fact. One of the genuinely best people in the sport, but also a brilliant coach. Like knows more, honestly, has forgotten more about player and team development than I'll ever know. So disappointing to see that he's been moved on. But for a coach in that world too, hard not to see it, hard not to read it, hard not to think about it, hard to live your life while all that stuff is going on and people are saying you're the world's worst coach. Hold on, he's lost 5 games of basketball. It's okay. And as was pointed out to me, if a couple of players made some free throws, they're 1-4. Like, it's it's not 0-5.
And does he keep his job there?
Well, exactly.
Like,
right.
That's the really hard part. But it's these sort of things, right?
It
it's
gets
this
in your
reactionary.
Head.
And I'm not. Southeast Melbourne have their process,
yeah, well,
and that's
they can do what
fine.
They do.
I'm not.
Yep.
I'm certainly not questioning that. But there's always this thought of, like, you know, how would have this lead up been affecting him as a coach?
Absolutely.
You know? And
that weighs
this,
on your mind.
Yeah, and it's this whole thing, and we talk imposter syndrome. All of this plays a part. This is what's making it probably worse than it's ever been. If I was to give an example of when I was early in my coaching.
Story time?
I reckon it might be, to be honest. This will be an Oasis drop in the future.
When I was early in my coaching.
What's the story? Morning glory.
Good grief. When I was early in my coaching, I would always preface my opinions. So I would say things like, oh, you know, like I don't know much about coaching, but, and start talking. And it wasn't until actually you, Rob, I'm not going to say punch me in the face because that could open
don't.
Up another. but it was that sort of a, you know, like a wake up, you know, sort of feeling when you were like, you are a coach, stop it. Just stop it. And I didn't, because I didn't even realize I was doing it. I didn't know, it wasn't like an on purpose thing or, you know, I just, that's just what I did because I didn't want people to think that I knew everything under the sun and that I was this wonderful coach and all this sort of stuff. I wanted them to know I knew where I was at. And then it wasn't until, yeah, you were like, stop. And I was like, yeah, actually, you're probably right. And then I realized that that's not just in coaching. I used to do that, you know, in life, like when I was working before Basketball Victoria. And I'd say things like, you know, following up, you know, oh, sorry to bother you, just following up on this instead of, hey, you should have answered me by now. Like, it's okay
Please
for me
to. Please don't send emails with that to Basketball Victoria, incidentally. Like,
no, but you know what I mean. Like, it was always this, I realised that I was doing it everywhere in my life. It wasn't just
You're almost apologising for yourself before you even got to that point.
Like I'm a problem. I'm an inconvenience, you know, and it's not that. So I'm actually really glad that I went through all of that because now I can spot it a mile away in my coaches. You know, I had a coach at Country Cup at the start of this year who was more than qualified for the role that she was in. But she was sort of standing on the sideline. It was her first real thing, but, you know, like within the pathway. But, yeah, she could have done it with her eyes closed. But she was standing on the sideline and sort of just had her arms crossed and a little bit hunched over and quite reserved. If I hadn't gone through all of that, I would have thought that's just how she stands. But I was able to walk over, unfold her arms, say, you belong here, coach this team. And then as soon as she heard that, bang, she was on. And she was directing and she felt comfortable. Sometimes that's all it takes is just a little push that
nudge
some
in the right
and that somebody's behind you as well. Some like you're going to have all this criticism and all these people that, you know, think they know better and all that sort of stuff. And that's fine because that I think that's healthy as well for growth. But to know that there's somebody who's got your back and believes in you. I think that helps negate a lot of that imposter syndrome.
Yeah, I love that story and it connects like really deeply with what I was thinking about this, Rob, when you posed it in that I think the imposter syndrome has so many more positive connotations to it than negatives in that, you know, you like going through it, Zoe has immediately developed a skill to be able to see others going through it. Like, what a positive. The other part, and, you know, Ryan Holiday talks a lot about this in his Stoicism.
You knew Marcus Aurelius.
Quick on the button.
Yes.
Like, you've done well there, Coops.
You know, Seneca says, you know, you can't learn that in what you think you already know. And that, you know, ego is the enemy, right? So that if you do go through these moments, it actually does force you to go into some self-awareness around, oh man, do I belong to, you know, do I belong here? Should I be here? Was that the right thing to say? All of a sudden I'm practicing self-awareness. I'm probably going to go and do some research, which I know that I've done in the past, where I was like, okay, I was here, maybe I made that comment, or I saw the game, but I decided not to say something because I didn't feel confident in saying something because I was obviously feeling that imposter syndrome, and then gone away and looked at him and like, no, actually, no, you know what? You're right. You had it. Like, okay, man, you got to step up and start saying something. And so I think that if you have that really healthy balance of self-awareness, self-belief, you can use those moments of imposter syndrome to do the positive things that Zoe was talking about, or that we've done in the past around, okay, you know, what do I need to do to start removing this feeling and get to a place of belonging?
It's interesting. It's a number of years now. Like, I'm trying to, over 5 years ago now, I got an invite to a FIBA World Association of Basketball Coaches presenters course or facilitators course. And you were actually on court at the time, Coops. You were in there with Crocs, I think it might have been at the time.
AC.
It was an assistant coach.
Yeah, I remember that. Yeah.
And we walked into the room and I'm like, where did this invite even come from? Like, how good is this? Like, I'll walk in here and you know how it's like the room set up like a horseshoe and, you know, everyone goes around the room, introduce themselves, where are they from? They started on the other side to me and I'm listening to everyone in the room say, oh, you know, I work for NBA head office and I work for the Brooklyn Nets and I've worked in NBA Africa and I've worked in NBA Asia. I'm like, I'm this pleb from Victoria that doesn't really know me. Like, I deliver a lot of community and club coaching courses. Like, it's, and like that same feeling when we got all the way around the room, it's like, man, I'm miles off this. Like, I don't even know why I'm in this room, as it turns out. And it's like, well, I've got a couple of options here. I can sit here and shrink to the background and try and take in as much as I possibly can and just take down some notes and go, oh, that was a pretty cool experience. Or I can just answer every freaking question and be annoying to the point where it's like, oh, but this guy, shut up. Like, I've had enough of him. But I kind of got to that point where I found the sweet spot between the two and had to kind of put myself in a position where it's like, look, here's what I deal with. Is it different for you? Ask more questions, find out, build some connections and some relationships. Like, in that same course was Annie LaFleur, who looked after me, like, absolute jet of a human. Joel Carlu, who's an assistant coach with the Illawarra Hawks at the moment, who's done a plethora of great work up in Mackay as well. Pat Hunt, Peter Lonigan ran the course, like, same deal, looked after me. Michael Haynes involved. Nelson, I want to say Isley. I want to say off the top of my head, I may have that completely wrong, was involved as facilitators as well. But at no stage did they make me feel like I wasn't good enough to be in that room. And none of the other participants did either. And this is a really key point, which I think you both hit on. The environment you put yourself in will either help you flourish or sink in that world. And the good people will look after you, shockingly enough. And they'll help you out along the way with, hey, really liked your point here, or explain that a little bit more. They won't just walk around and say, that's wrong, that's stupid, why would you do it that way?
Yeah, I think it's important to know, though, there are those people as well.
For
yeah.
sure.
Like, yeah. I've been in rooms where I just, I wasn't out of my depth, but I wasn't the same personality type. Like, I wasn't, my ego didn't match. Yep. What was in the rest of the room, and there was a little bit of a contest between everybody just trying to get their say. I think about that and often, because I was never going to let what I did in that happen again, which was shrink. Like, they got into this ego match and I sat out. Like, you know, it was like, got the note from my parents, I can't do PE today. Like, it was not me. And I walked out of that, reflected on it and went, I had something to say multiple times and I'm never going to let that happen again. Now, I've one of the things those that know me well and that test we did also pointed it out, I've got to make sure I don't become one of those people because, you know, you can go too far the other way. So I'm really conscious of when I'm in those rooms, making sure that, you know, everybody gets a say and, you know, that we're including everybody and all that sort of stuff. But, it was, again, another really good lesson. And I think sometimes we don't put ourselves in those positions because of the fear and then we don't learn. And so it's we've got to face those fearful moments.
I'm the same. Like, I think when you get in those rooms, there are times where you hear what other people are saying and it's like, man, I might be a fair way off it in comparison to where they're at with it. But you've probably got something to offer in another element that they probably aren't quite so au fait with. And, you know, your mentality is, oh, whatever. Yes, that was an Oasis reference. as to, you know, okay, I'm going to use what I can out of this. If I have a knowledge gap somewhere that I think they can fill for me, I'm going to try and take as much as I possibly can from that. So the imposter syndrome, like, I love what you said, Cooper. It's not a negative. Like, there are so many positives you can take out of this.
As long as you don't let it cripple you.
That's the difference.
Right. And that's why I see a lot of coaches that are crippled by that imposter syndrome. Like, be aware of it 100%, but don't let it hold you back.
So is there a process that either of you have gone through, and I'll throw this out, when you feel like it's coming on, to sort of stifle it at that moment? And it's like, well, okay, here's the process I want to go through now. I can sort of feel myself being a little bit overwhelmed with what's going on. Because I look back, I'll give you my example on this. First time head coach with a Vic Metro state team. Like, I'd been in the program for a decade before that. You were on staff with me, Coops. The first drill we walked out was like a real dumb little like four-corner passing drill, which is normally just...
Four-corner passing.
Yeah, it's not that four-corner passing before you go at me. But it was one of those drills where it's like, hey, this is just all about high energy, see who wants to be there, get them moving and all that sort of stuff. I reckon I've run that drill like hundreds of times. But you walk on court for the first time as the first-time head coach, and it's like, geez, we've got 140-something athletes here, and I like all eyes are on me. All our basket coaches, all the coaching staff, all the kids, all the parents, all eyes are on me. I'm not ready for this. Like, I've done this before. I know I've done this before. I think I can coach at this level, but I got to that point where it's like, geez, I'm not sure I can. Like, and it was literally a, hey, you know, buck up, sunshine. if it's not you, it's going to be one of your assistants. You go do it. Like, you got to lead in this moment. So it was more, I think, awareness that kind of snapped me out of it rather than I had a process to follow to get to that point. What about you, Coops? Is there anything that sort of springs to mind for you?
Probably not so much in the moment, but what it has forced me to do, especially over the last probably 10 years, is be the most meticulous preparer.
Yeah, gotcha.
Like
that
really pushed me to be like, I don't want to feel that way, you know, like I especially don't want to feel that way in a big or important moment, kind of like what you're talking about, you know, like how you start a campaign or start a session or whatever it may be, that's important. Yep. And
for anyone that knows Coops, the most meticulous OCD like level.
Yeah, he's not like, kidding.
like that line on that graph is 0.4 of a millimeter out with the rest of them.
This
like,
font is different from this
no
font.
No good. Like, it's like next level stuff. Yeah. It's actually quite impressive.
It's great.
It may be a sickness, but it forced me to do that. It really did say like in me to be like, no, I don't want to put myself in that position again. And maybe I do, maybe I will feel it. And of course, but what am I in control of that's going to avoid that as much as possible? And I knew that that was going to be a big part of it, you know, like the session planning and the thought process and all these sorts of things. And that's really, really, really helped me. The other one that kind of relates to what Zoe was talking about, I can't use names or things like that just because of the scenario, but I was looking at joining a staff in one of the highest levels that I've coached and was really excited about, jumped on board, and we were in some games and I was making some suggestions to the head coach. And the other assistant coach, who had a lot more experience than me at that level, was kind of putting me down and like really kind of dismissing every idea that I had, to the point where the imposter syndrome hit. Where I was like, man, like am I getting everything
I'm
wrong?
Miles off this.
Yeah, like, yeah. Oh man, like I'm kind of copying it. And it kept going. And then I went back and I looked at some of the film and I ended up doing a film session and I got some positive feedback from the head coach. So then I was like, okay, no, maybe I wasn't too far off it. Maybe this is more the situation. And it was. I was lucky that obviously like I went through my processes and worked really hard to be like, okay, no, I am here. It was the dynamic of the staff. And that was the lesson. To be like, you can't just jump into things, especially because back then I was so obsessed with climbing the pathway as quickly as possible, where I feel like I've changed that now, where I'm a lot more comfortable and happy being where my feet are. But back then I was just trying to get to the next thing. So I jumped into this scenario that was just completely wrong for me. But it brought out those feelings because of what had happened.
Yeah, you hit on such an important point there in the environment that is around you, and understanding that just because you're going through this process, not everyone feels the same way, acts the same way, does things the same way. We would be naive to sit here and say that everyone, hand on heart, is a holistic coach that understands about development, progression, and does things the right way.
And wants the best for other people.
Yeah. Look, the world doesn't work that way. Mm. We can only control our patch to make sure that it does, and sometimes you've got to roll with it. Oasis. As to what goes on next. But it is, like, control what you can control in your space, I think, is a really important part of it. Zoe, I know you've gone through tons of these types of situations where it's like, you know, what am I doing? Almost.
Yeah. And
it's almost gaslighting at times.
It is. You're gaslighting. They're gaslighting you and forcing you to gaslight yourself.
Yeah.
And it's horrible. One thing to keep in mind is when you encounter these people is that is their insecurity showing its face.
Well said.
So it's not actually about you. It's about them. Really hard in the moment, especially like if you're in a game like you were, Coops, to have that sort of clarity. But it is about them. And then you've got to think about, well, why would they have chosen this process with you? Probably because you deserve to be there. You know, so that's another way you can sort of, you know, find your way back to your confidence. But one of the things on top of what Coops is saying, because again, imposter syndrome really does come from, again, insecurity and a lack of control. Control everything you can. So if you're starting, like Coops is saying, if you're starting to feel that, dive into, you know, your whatever it is, any type of learnings, or if you've, you know, if it's a team you're coaching, like have every one of your last second plays down and be able to, you know, whip them out at a moment's notice and, you know, have all that set. That will instantly help you exhale and drop your shoulders a little bit. But the other one that I do as well is engage mentors. Mentors are really important because if they know you probably better than anybody. And, you know, there's been a time, like Rob is a mentor of mine, and there have been times where I've asked the question and didn't like the answer of, you know, am I ready for this? And the answer was no. And it hurt, but it made me work harder. And so then when I was like, am I ready for this? And yes. Well, now I'm going into that with it doesn't matter what anybody says. I know I'm ready now because I've got my backer, you know, all that sort of stuff. It's important to engage your mentors and they have to be honest. Like if you're a mentor, you have to be honest, and sometimes that's having a tough conversation.
Yeah, it's a great point. And Rob is also a mentor of mine. Yeah, and
what a brilliant job I'm doing with both of you. No, I'm joking.
Country's thriving. Country's thriving.
Look, to be completely fair, it goes both ways. There are plenty of times where I get feedback from both of you or ask an opinion on something as well. People get this almost one-way view of mentoring in that you only, it's transactional. It goes one direction only. It's not the case. There have been plenty of times we've started talking about soccer and we've ended up on a basketball solution somewhere and the other way around. So I don't want anyone to sort of think that, hey, this is only a one-way transaction thing. This is very much both ways. And this is the thing, surround yourself with the people that will be both ways. That's kind of my view on it.
Yeah, when you were speaking then, Zoe, you reminded me in my I have some reminders in my phone that come up systematically throughout the day to just kind of prompt me to, you know, be a better version. And one that I have here is, ego is the enemy. We are not as smart and as wise as we'd like to think we are. If we ever do want to become wise, it comes from questioning and from humility. And when you were talking there about, you know, that ability to have those conversations with your mentors, it has to come from humility. You know, it has to come from this place of, I don't know, I want to know. Let's have open and honest discussion about how I can get there.
Yeah.
And you know, again, like trying to put a positive spin on this, if a bit of imposter syndrome has provoked you to ask those questions, then great, go for it.
It's exactly right. And I think there are times you just got to roll with it. And yes, you both looked at me blankly. Oasis.
Yeah.
It's, you got to be really mindful too. Like, I am someone that manages social anxiety. Like, it's the world's most awkward person. You know, the amount of times I've walked out of a shop and they're like, hey, you know, enjoy your purchase. I'm like, yeah, you too. I'm like, what the hell have I done? Like, it's that sort of stuff.
Because you rehearse your responses.
But that's what it is. Like, I play out situations in my head hundreds of times. Now, there are times where I sort of think, actually, it's pretty useful as a coach. Like, you want to go through those things. But there are other times where it's like, geez, am I surviving or thriving in this sort of environment as well? And it is via preparation that it allows you to be in that world where it's like, no, I'm comfortable here. Like, and it's, I think this is the hard part, is that we do have probably a lot of coaches that have great knowledge, whether it be the tactical sides of things like the X's and O's, or just people management sides of things. Not always do the two align. And usually if you're good at one, you're not brilliant at the other. Like, you do tend to, I'd find, and this is without pigeonholing anyone, people either fall into one of two categories: brilliant tactically, but poor relationships, or great relationships, poor tactically. And there's obviously some middle ground with all of these sorts of things as well. But it is really hard. How do you go about having the conversation? Because this is a world both of you live in where you're not only responsible for players, you're also responsible for coaches. How do you deliver that feedback to coaches without hurting feelings and just saying, hey, you suck at this? Like, because obviously that's not the way to go. Like, there's got to be a better way to package it up. How do you go about having that conversation with coaches?
I think it's really important to remember what it was like being on the other side. The second you forget, you've got to be honest, and you can't allow, worrying about feelings to stop you getting the message across, but you've always got to have in the back of your mind what it was like being on the other side. So for mine, it's a conversation timing and location is just as important as message. So if you're going to, you know, come up and, you know, really lay it on thick on a coach straight after a game, that message doesn't matter. You could be giving the world's greatest message, they're not going to remember it. So allowing just a second to decompress. I always start a conversation, let's say it's after a game, let's say it's at Nationals, you know, let them get their stuff, they move off to the side, have a drink, you know, just take a breath. Then I walk in and I always start it with, go. Like, you tell me first, because you might hit off all my feedback points. So then, you know, because there's nothing worse, I think, than sitting there having somebody tell you what they think, going, yeah, I know. Like, I would have said that if you'd given me the chance, you know.
Or everything you did wrong. It's like, yeah. I'm aware.
Yeah.
Yeah, we know we missed that box out.
So I think it's important to hear their side first. And then, so that's why, you know, as a mentor or any type of coach's coach, or that you're taking notes, so then you can, as they're hitting it off, you can scrub them off and you don't miss anything. I think then it's got to be to the point, but again, your body language, your tone, your could change everything. So if it's, you know, if you're standing over someone a bit demonstrative, if you're pointing in their face, if you're, you know, all that sort of stuff, you could say the exact same thing, calm, you know, with an open sort of stance, that sort of stuff. You'll get a better response and reaction to that. I think it's also making sure you know the person's ready to hear it. So, you know, for Coops and I, if they're in a state system, they have to expect that feedback is coming. There's no way around that. That's coming, and they are aware of that and ready for that. You know, if we're talking about, say, our coaches in sort of the FDP landscape or you know, that sort of earlier developmental space, well, now all of a sudden it's more conversational rather than just info dumping. But again, as everything, it all comes down to knowing who you're talking to. You know, some people, if I'm talking to you, Rob, I am just giving you the bare facts right in your face because you can't stand any fluff or, you know, anything like that. That if I try and do that to you, that will irritate you and I'll lose you from my message. But if I've got a young, and let's even say female coach who's new to the landscape, then I'm going to go take that on a different route. So knowing who you're talking to is really important.
Yep. Coops?
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. Like, just absolutely hit the nail on the head. And it just brings to mind just some recent examples. Friend of the podcast, Dylan Cole. We had to have a chat around some coaching and his pathway and so on. And, we were going to have it was going to be a long chat. It needed to have some honesty to it. Took him out to the golf course. Yeah, both nice. Like golf.
You selfies suck.
Yeah. Like it's, yeah.
No,
yeah.
I think that's great. No, I think that's,
I actually really enjoy
yeah.
it.
Yeah.
No, he likes golf. I like golf. It was a great environment for us to get out and, you know, and enjoy each other's company but have that conversation. That was a good one.
And also a bit of a distraction too. So, like, when that hard stuff that you're talking about is coming, he doesn't have to sit there awkwardly looking you in the eye and,
he can walk 200 metres to the left and go, I think you fall up from over there as Coops has gone down the fairway.
But we talk about it with the kids though, right? Like, we don't stand right in their face. We sit down next to them and, it's a similar sort of concept.
Yep, I really like it.
Yeah, the one that I continue to have trouble with is my own white line fever, and especially when that's connected to... You know, our
self-awareness.
This is where we need to be recording because did you see his little shimmy he gave? When
like country cup, SEC, state teams, obviously, like I bleed for those teams. I'm so passionate, you know, like Zoe is and like Darren and Jenna and everyone else who's involved, you know, in our programs. Like, we just care so much about that. And that's where I need to be better, and I'm constantly working on trying to find ways to give feedback a lot more effectively there. And I bring to mind another friend of the pod, you know, Fernando Rios Rodriguez. Shout out to my hyphen brother. he was coaching at SCC. We lost a tight game to Tasmania on a free throw, missed free throw box out. And I wasn't a happy camper and, you know, basically went straight over to him, you know, like some of my mentors had. Like, I'm used to getting in your face, like, hard feedback, especially if I hadn't done the job. And I gave it to him there. And then, you know, to his credit, he had the courage to give me a call and say, look, I really didn't appreciate, you know, that kind of feedback in the moment. My first reaction was, oh my God, I can't believe, like, how soft are you? You know, you need, but, you know, in my head kind of thing. But that, no, it's like, okay, I need to do a better job of understanding, you know, who my coaches are, you know, when they're going to best receive the feedback and how am I better supporting them. So that was another good lesson. And then the other one we had, which is probably like a happy, kind of happy ending story, in that Ben White, who's the GM down at Southern Penn and, again, a great soldier in our program, was an assistant coach of the state program, continues to coach and do a lot of things for us. But it got to the point where I didn't think that head coaching was going to be in his pathway. And so we sat down and we had that conversation. And that's obviously a really, really tough conversation for any coach to hear, that, you know, going on to be a head coach is probably not going to happen. and knew that feelings were going to get hurt, had that conversation. He was upset, and understandably. But we did talk about the possibility of him becoming a team manager because I thought, you know, the way he interacts with the athletes, his attention to detail, all these sorts of positives that he brought to the table could translate really well to that. And we mentioned that and, you know, kind of brushed that aside. But anyway, he went through the thought process, came back and said, actually, you know what, I think you might be right. And has fastly become one of the best team managers we've ever had in our program and was recently rewarded with a green and gold polo for the under-15s, you know, to go and be a team manager for Australia. And that was one of those moments where we just had to say, okay, feelings are going to get a little bit hurt, but we think this is going to be to the betterment of the program and for this individual. And obviously it turned out that way. So what a bonus.
Well, yeah. I think something that's, I think, critical for listeners is when Coops talks about his white line fever and all that sort of stuff, one thing he always does, though, is check in. And what I mean by that, so he'll go and speak to coaches at Nationals and there's been times where it's like, hey, can you watch this? Like, and so I'll watch him and then he'll come back and he's like, how did that look? You know, so he's constantly sort of finding ways to try and improve and check himself and all that sort of stuff. And I think that's brilliant because if a coach at that level, his caliber and his level, is still willing and open to seek feedback and try and get better. He's the head of a program and he's still trying to find a way to be better serving of the people within the program. He could easily just go, my way, highway. Yeah.
Plenty of people have done.
They do.
Over the years.
They absolutely
do. It's not unusual.
But instead, he's trying to create an environment that fosters success with everyone. Yeah. And I think that's brilliant. And I think that's something that a lot of coaches need to try and hold on to and aspire to.
And there are times where it's two steps forward, one step back. Like it happens continually where the environment or yourself or the coach or whatever hasn't been ready to hear it or you haven't been ready to deliver it and whatever the case might be. And you have those situations where it's like, hey, this was not my best moment. No worries. What can I do to improve it from here? And I think that self-reflection and that self-awareness is a really valuable part of it. This isn't uni, so I'm not going to citate the article. But it's... I think it's Oasis,
isn't it?
Do you know what I mean? I reckon you might be right.
L. Gallagher.
Yeah, exactly right. The great philosopher. Not in conflict resolution. However, but I think it's on the lines of something like 95% of people think they're self-aware, but in reality it's only 10 to 15%. Mm. Mm. And that's such a vastly different like statistic when you look at it. And to the other side of imposter syndrome is this beautiful effect called Dunning-Kruger. So this is alarming. You've never heard of this, Coops?
This is great.
Mate, yeah.
And you will be able to think of at least five people by the time he's done talking that this applies to.
So largely it's one of those situations where the lack of knowledge and skill makes you overestimate your own competence on things. So he's just reeling them off at the moment. Little by little he's getting through them all. But it is one of those things where sometimes a little bit of knowledge can be really damaging. And, I mean, I think about it a lot of times. And, look, I'm not in this situation, so I'm only sort of casting a guess at this. As a parent that might have grown up around the sport, gone through it, has now got a child coming through, but has lots of opinions on how things should be happening. And it's like, well, okay, not necessarily the same landscape. Just because it worked in the 80s doesn't necessarily mean it works in the 2020s. Those sorts of things too. That is a really... I think fascinating impact on the mental side of it, because you go through this this almost peak, and there's a visual that goes with this. Google Dunning-Kruger, you'll find it. Another book review, I think we might have spoken about it, Think Again by Adam Grant, talks in length about this. So if you're looking for more information, Google it. There's plenty of stuff out there. But it's this this, you know, peak of I know everything. And it's a really steep peak of, you know, I know everything. And then it's this just valley of despair where it's like, geez, nothing's going right. I know nothing. I'm terrible at this. I don't know anything. And then you get into that sort of slope of enlightenment where it's like, oh, actually, I'm not as dumb as I thought I was. I do know a little bit of stuff. I just didn't know where to necessarily apply it. It's all about sort of finding your blind spots. Where are the areas that you need the most amount of work on? You're probably oblivious to them at the start because you don't know what you don't know. It's normal in that sort of space. So trying to work out where you fit within all of that, that is the probably the opposite, I would suggest, to the imposter syndrome. So it is a really fascinating look into it. I think Darren McInnes was the first one that sort of highlighted me to it, and then I don't think I've stopped seeing it ever since. Like, it just appears in my algorithm. I don't know what that's trying to tell me on social media, hence why I'm getting off social media for 24 hours. I need to stop being hit in the face with it. But when you look at, you know, dealing with both of these in particular, like self-talk is obviously such a big part of what we go through as coaches. One of the biggest things is facts over feelings. You know, what you feel is not necessarily what's happening in that space. Like on the Coops, I know you're a big journal person in particular. That's got to help you, I feel like, with what you go through as well as a coach.
Yeah, very much so. Like, just being able to build some of those practices around, you know, getting some things out of my head down on paper, being able to bring myself back from those moments of, like, there's this great, I'm sure I've said it before, Marcus Aurelius quote that says, the tranquility that comes when you stop caring about what they say or do or think, only what you do. And obviously you're not trying to be oblivious to people, but just that you have that inner peace that we were talking about earlier, that, you know, I have done the work, you know, I do belong here. And so being able to journal, being able to read, being able to just come back to some of those sayings and those things that have become really valuable to me has become a great practice and really, really helped me in the past few years. Yeah. Well,
and just the positive affirmations that come with that too. Mm. Like, that self-talk is what we talk about. It's like, hey, maybe I'm not as bad as I think I am. Mm. Like, what did I actually do well? And I think that's something that coaches suffer from a lot, is they'll normally go through a game. It's like, should have done this, should have done this, should have done this. And it's like, yeah, but maybe you're only in that position where you should have done those things because you did something else earlier. Like, you made that sub earlier, and that gave you a chance to get back into that game where you could have made that other error. And that's, you know, it happens a lot.
Well, you look at how all three of us have, and Nick last week, evaluated that test that we did.
Yep.
We haven't actually spoken about what the positives are for it. We've only talked about the things that were the blind spots. That's how we're wired. I think when we're talking about imposter syndrome, though, it's really, really key to remember you are going to make mistakes, and you're going to make more mistakes probably than successes, particularly early on, and that's okay.
Yeah, they can't define you.
Correct. Yeah, it's not a reflection of you. The only time it becomes a reflection of you is if you haven't done the work, if you've skipped steps or mm-hmm. you've, you know, like, you know, we see it a lot with sometimes with state team coaches. You know, they're in everything. They then get a state team role and we don't see them again, you know, and then all of a sudden it's, oh this is overwhelming. Well, yeah, because we haven't seen you for a year. Yeah. Like, so it's, if you continue to do the work, you continue to surround yourself with the right people, and you know, the journaling stuff is so important as well. I think even from being able to go back and see where you started. So looking back and going, oh, hang on, like when you're having those moments of, I'm terrible, I don't know what I'm doing, go back to where you started, and then it's like, actually, I've come a long way. And I think we get stuck in imposter syndrome because we expect to be at certain levels or certain places in our journey at certain times. Things will happen as they happen, and you've just got to, you know, control what you can control, and that is doing the work, you know, engaging mentors, but also give yourself a break, step away from the game a little bit, and, you know, engage in hobbies and yeah. and family and friends and relationships.
Just the importance of being idle,
yeah,
I think is really important.
Yeah, because this can overtake your whole life. Right? Like it can. And, you know, it does for the three of us because it's also our job,
yeah.
Which we're also very lucky to be able to do that as our job. But it can overtake everything. What the danger is for that is when it overtakes everything, you forget to love it. So it's, you know, you engage in those other things. It's like when the amount of people that have commented on my one book club submission, yeah. which was a barbecue book, a barbecue recipe book. But the point of that...
16th of November, Coops.
Yeah.
Big barbecue cook-off coming up.
Hey-o, here we go.
But the point of that was to say, hey, you don't have to be consuming, you know, content 24/7. You know, like, do the work, yes, but you've also got to do the work on you as a person away from the game.
Well, a big part of that is just having a crack at it.
Yeah.
Like, sometimes it's just like, hey, this is going to be uncomfortable, but
what's so be the it. Worst that will happen?
Yeah. Well, as far as I'm aware, none of our coaches have the nuclear code, so we're going to be okay.
But
there.
But that's like what I mean. Like, okay, you lose a game. You know, we lost a game at Nationals this year with the under-16s, and it was like the quarterfinal against Vic Metro. You know, Vic Country, from a you know, community perspective, shouldn't come close to Vic Metro. Shouldn't. We did. We nearly got it, right? Disappointing for everybody. We're all still alive. Like, we're all okay. Those kids still, you know, got to perform at Nationals, and those coaches got to perform at Nationals, and it doesn't mean it's not disappointing. But perspective is so important in this, and I think that's something I think I've only really learned that over the last couple of years. Is just, and it's probably come in line with my dad has been diagnosed with Alzheimer's and is declining fairly rapidly. So as a result, I'm seeing that and going, that is an actual problem, right? Like, that is something to be, you know, upset by, and allow you to, you know, to feel that. We wanted to win that game, of course. We'll throw everything at it. We still all work so hard. But at the end of the day, like, I wake up in the morning and I still know everybody's face. So I'm doing okay.
Rightly or wrongly.
Yeah.
There's a few you'd probably prefer to
I'd like
less
to forget
of.
Some yeah. faces, yes. But yeah, I know that's a bit deep and a bit, you know, whatever. But I think it's important. I think if we let it consume us to, and Coops talks about it a lot with athletes, that it becomes our identity, that's when we become miserable.
Yeah. Just coaches, I hope you go back and listen to Zoe's last 5 minutes again. You know, like, have that there, save it. You know, that was really powerful. And I think that's important that we keep checking back in on that. Yeah, you know, we say to our athletes, if you're going to be your own biggest critic, you got to be your biggest fan as well.
Yeah.
Yep. You know, and then the other one I just want to double down on is everyone's journey is their own. You know, don't look at other people. Just be where your feet are. Understand you may go slower, faster, whatever it is. You may be dealing with some different things behind the scenes, like what Zoe is, and you know, that all plays a part. And so, you know, yeah, try and keep that positive mindset. Keep learning, keep growing. But yeah, that was really cool. Thanks for sharing.
Pleasure.
It was very good. You are a rock and roll star. It's all right. We are into.
Is this nearly over?
Nearly. We have book club.
Yes.
I have many leather-bound books, and my apartment smells of rich mahogany.
Okay, so last week I referenced the book club will be back this week, and it is back this week, but to be fair, the book I was going to talk about, I haven't finished yet. So consequently, I've had to go back in the archives a little bit for something I've read a while ago, so my memory on everything that's gone on in this book is a little hazy. The book is Living with a Seal by Jesse Itzler, I'm going to say his name is. Don't think of like the roof seal. Think of like seal as in like the Navy SEAL. This is effectively the David Goggins origin story. So Jesse is an entrepreneur by trade. That would struggle to get that out, but we got there in the end. His wife like founded and owned Spanx, like the fairly successful family in all. But because of that, lives a very comfortable life. So his business background is he effectively sold time on private jets to people. So people would come and say, hey, I need a jet for 40 hours this week. He'd sell them 40 hours worth of time, and that's where he made his money.
At the Catalina Wine Mixer?
At the Catalina Wine Mixer. It's, you know, strictly 80s Joel. But his thing is, I live too comfortable a life. Like, so I need to go through what is actually difficult, and that is I want to live with the Navy SEAL. So he brought this guy in to his family, which is, as it turns out, David Goggins. Like, this is before David Goggins was David Goggins. So for those of you that haven't seen or heard of him, never finished Can't Hurt Me, Navy SEAL, Army Ranger, Air Force, like ultra marathon runner. Like, I think he's been referenced as like the baddest man on the planet or something like that. Like, he's anytime you get a chance to sort of see him, it's an experience. Like, it's, he's out there. And there are times where I've been listening to him while I've been driving. I've got out of the car, like, ready to run an ultra marathon. It's like, yes, I can do this. And then my calf goes like, no, I can't. Like, but he is, like, he got brought in and effectively, Jesse's like, I want you to live with me for a month and train me to make me just, you know, understand your world effectively. And, like, Goggins came in, like, everything he said he had to do, he had to, and he just wouldn't compromise on it. Like, day one, he's like, you got to do 100 pull-ups. And he's like, yeah, I reckon I can do probably about 6. He's like, no, 100. We're going to sit here until you do 100. Like, and just went through it. Like, the mental torment that Goggins put him through throughout all of this. Really funny. Like, Jesse tells the story really well. It is a funny sort of book to read in that sort of world as well. There's a great story in there where Jesse brings Goggins into a business meeting, and the business meeting happens to have Kevin Garnett in it. Like, this is the world they sort of mix in. And apparently Garnett had never really been engaged in any of these business meetings, but kind of like two alphas, they sort of sniffed each other out, and all of a sudden everyone took a back seat in this meeting. There's like Goggins and Garnett were just going at each other, and you can kind of imagine what that would look like if you've ever seen like Garnett play or Goggins talk. Like, just a real experience. So, funny read, a great insight into the just how differently some people are wired. Like, Goggins does not accept failure. Like, it is one of those things where that is, and look, have your opinions on him as a person. Like, he's obviously got some baggage from his youth and those sorts of things, but he is a genuinely funny and inspiring guy. I don't think he means to be either, like, but he ends up being that way. It is a really cool read as to what it would look like. Jesse tells the story brilliantly about, you know, just all the things that went wrong and that sort of stuff as well, but it is a really good read. So if I ever finish the other book that I've been meaning to, I'll come back to that. But the recommendation from this week, Living with a Seal. So, coaches, good luck with it. Go and have a read of it if you get the opportunity to do so. Both of you, thank you very much for jumping in today. This has been a really enlightening podcast on my end too. It's funny that one of the staff members walked past before Beck Ross. She's like, what are you guys talking about today? And I'm like, oh, imposter syndrome. She's like, oh, I might actually listen to that one.
Yeah, actually.
What do you mean actually listen? Like, why is this not required listening for every BV staff member? If we can get to Northern Ireland, we can get to One Turner South. This shouldn't be an issue. But coaches, please go back, unpack all of this. Figure out what's right for you. If you need help with any of it, please do reach out and we'll gladly help you. We won't provide you feedback, but we will gladly help you along the way with anything we can in the coaching space. But everyone, thanks very much for listening and we'll catch you next week.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Talking Split Podcast. Make sure you like and comment on your favorite podcast platform. And don't forget to share and subscribe so that you never miss an episode.